But I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate. We think too much and feel too little. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness. Without these qualities, life will be violent. And all will be lost. Do not despair. The hate of men will pass, and dictators die. Dictators die. And the power they took from the people will return to the people. Will return to the people. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world. To do away with greed.
Welcome. I'm sorry, this is Deanna. Good evening. It is Monday, December 30th, 2013. This is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the cold suburbs of Chicago. Tonight I have the pleasure of subbing for my good friend Clint Richardson. Thanks for joining me on RBN. RBN's website is republicbroadcasting.org. During the program, please email your questions or comments to comment@spingola.com. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the, by visiting spingola.chatango.com. I was just listening to the music so intently that it didn't dawn on me that, oh, that is the music, the intro music. I'm so used to my own intro music that it just didn't dawn on me. Clint's website is realityblogger.wordpress.com. Be sure to watch his latest movie. It's fabulous. It is called Common Core, Agenda 21, and Global Governance. And it's a fabulous, fabulous movie, well worth spending the time to watch it. It is almost 3 hours. He has all of these fabulous links to study that coordinate with the video. So please do go to his website, realityblogger.wordpress.com. Our guest tonight is Veronica Clark. Welcome, Veronica. Are you there? Is Veronica with us? Dan, is Veronica with us? She what? Oh, she disconnected. Okay. Well, I'm not sure why she disconnected. Maybe she, maybe I'll just, can you try and get her back? Okay, working on it. Alrighty. Veronica's latest book is entitled War Wolves of the Iron Cross, Black Wolf, White Reich. And it just came out in December, just this month. And it is from Vera Icona Publishers, which is Veronica's publishing company. And this book is a translation of Gorsh Pekin and Cornelia Cruz's, well, I can't pronounce the actual title because, but it does mean Prussian Bliss of Love, a German family from Africa. And you may purchase this book via Amazon. And anyway, I hope we get her back. I do not know what her website is. It used to be VeraIconaPublishers.org. And I don't think that that is the website anymore. Okay, do we have her back? Veronica, are you there?
Yes, I am. I don't know what happened.
Oh, well, I'm not sure. I was just waiting for my intro music, not realizing that of course, Clint's music is different, and I was just kind of enjoying the song and just listening and looking over my notes and things. And all of a sudden it dawned on me, oh my gosh, that's the intro.
Right.
I have to say something here.
Very odd.
So tell us about your new book.
Okay, it's just the latest installment in the Werewolves of the Iron Cross series, and the main title is Black Wolf, White Reich, and the subtitle is An Afro-German Family in Nazi Germany. And the reason I say Nazi Germany and not NS or National Socialist Germany is because more people identify with Nazi. When they see that, they know exactly what you're talking about. If they were to see NS or National Socialist, they're not going to know right off the bat what that is. So I understand that some people were upset about my usage of the word Nazi, but I've already addressed that in the previous book. So, okay. And basically what this book is it's a story about an African individual who was brought to Germany as a child. And he then went on to found his own little family dynasty, the Sabak El Sher family line in Germany. And the majority of the family lived under the Nazis, and they were all very mixed race. The girls in particular, I believe it was Editha and Ilsa were the two girls who were the last in line. Those two look 100% white. One cannot even tell that they have any black blood whatsoever. And those would be the granddaughters of Gustav Sabak El Sher. And that's really the individual that the book is centered on. His father was brought over as a gift to the Prince of Prussia.
Time period?
This would be, I believe it was mid-1800s. I don't have the book in front of me, but mid to late 1800s. And then Gustav was there prior to the ascension of the National Socialists and then through that regime. And he was given a very prominent funeral, and on his casket was even featured a swastika flag. So kind of interesting, or a banner. But it just details the trials and tribulations of the family as well as their successes. And considering the context, they did very well under the Nazis. Some of them were actors. The two sons Gustav's two sons served in, one of them served in the military, and he died or disappeared at Stalingrad. They're not totally sure if he died, but they suspected he did. He was a medic. And then the other son was going to be drafted into the Wehrmacht, but he was too old and frail health-wise. So the Wehrmacht decided not to draft him. And in fact, he got out of Volkssturm duty as well due to his age and frail health. So he survived the war.
Okay. All righty.
A very interesting story.
Okay. And this is a translation. And who translated this?
I translated this book.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Super. I know some of your other books you've had help, but you have, and you've got pictures in here, but you have learned the language sufficiently well. That you can translate now.
I use partial machine translation, but I am able to discern what is meant in almost every single passage. There's very little ambiguity, and mainly one has to know the context. I'm not going to claim that I'm a German expert, so anyone reading this can just judge for themselves. And of course, I give the actual translated book, so one can certainly consult the German edition.
Sure.
But nothing was left out. Some things were a little more summarized or summarized differently from the original German. The original book is extremely anti-Nazi and very, very pro the family and pro-black.
Okay.
So I gave it a slightly different spin. It's a little bit more objective between the two.
Okay. Why did you happen to do this book? What appealed to you that you wanted to translate this and make it available?
The main reason is because too many people are under the impression that things were completely cut and dried or black and white in Nazi Germany, and I am trying to show that that was not the case. And some have criticized me as trying to promote like a multicultural agenda or trying to paint Hitler as a non-racist, etc. But really what I'm trying to show is that the diversity that was present...
Veronica...
It goes for a long time. I really like the song, but wow.
I do too, but enough is enough already.
We get the point, Roger Waters. We get the point. Okay, so.
So you were talking about that you were being accused of being a multiculturalist or trying to promote a multicultural culture when there wasn't one or something. Somebody's right. Always now, accusing somebody of something.
Exactly. I've had the Rainbow Reich accusation. I've had, she's saying that Hitler was a multicultural or a multicultural proponent. I don't know what they mean by Hitler was a multicultural, but that's how it was put. That Hitler was pro-diversity, that he was advocating mixing with Negroid racial components, etc. That's not what I've ever said. What I'm trying to show is that the Nazis were far more tolerant of diversity and otherness than has been traditionally portrayed. And this is another aspect or another pillar of World War II and National Socialist research that, in my view, like the Holocaust, is important to undermine. And that's really my only goal, is to show that we've been incorrect in our analysis in this respect. Now, the only other argument that can possibly explain the tolerance of the diversity, the presence of the diversity in the military, civil sphere, etc., the alliances Hitler made with India and Japan over, say, German Americans or the British or these other elements, or even other white peoples in Europe, etc., is that the Nazis really did just use these other people, that they were so desperate and so pathetic in their racism and their superiority, if you will, so arrogant that they would just go use whoever they needed to achieve what they wanted to achieve. I don't see how anyone can get around one or the other. One either has to accept the trajectory that they were genuine in these alliances and in this tolerance. There was always going to be some practicality that some Germans were interested in simply using these people for their own ends. But war, that changed. Go ahead.
But didn't they attempt to befriend all of their neighbors, their European neighbors? They attempted to befriend Britain and to make an alliance against the Soviets. And the British simply would not work with them, not in any way, shape, or form. But there were these other groups, these other nationalities, India, Japan, mm-hmm. And other groups who also embraced nationalism and saw what Hitler was attempting to do.
Absolutely correct. That is what I argue. And Gerald Horn in Race War, which is one of the premises that the Axis History Forum people attacked me on, Gerald Horn says basically, now he doesn't actually say this, but this is what one can infer from what he says. The British and other white races slapped the Germans' hand. No, we don't want an alliance with you. And so in rejection, the Germans turned to the non-white races, such as the Indians, Japanese, etc., even many Slavic derivatives, like the Croats and whatnot, in order to overthrow the prevailing Anglo-Saxon power strangle on the world. So, in a sense, it was almost like the Nazis were reacting to the Anglo-Saxon racism. And part of that reaction to that supremacy was to go to these other races and use them to overthrow that Anglo-Saxon supremacy. So it's very difficult for me to see how certain people can't see it as an intra-racial war, that this was white on white, really, and that other people were kind of drawn into it. Now, they had their own goals, of course. One of the Japanese prime goals was to overthrow white supremacy generally, and they saw in Germany a great chance to do so. They were mainly anti-British and anti-American.
Right, right. And that was beginning with just after World War One, right. When they wanted to have some sort of a say at the Paris Peace Conference and were not allowed, and they were not allowed any kind of equality. Mm-hmm. So definitely it's exactly. A long-term kind of a thing. Now, you mentioned AccessHistory.com, and there was an issue that that somehow you were block banned from this site?
Yeah, apparently the guy that runs it, I believe he's Swedish. His name is Marcus Wendell, and it's mm-hmm. Access History, yeah, forum.accesshistory.com. He had posted something about my books, and it's literally the thread is Black Nazis by Veronica Clark. Mm-hmm. And he does not give the full title in that original thing. The full title is Black Nazis, A Study of Racial Ambivalence in Nazi Germany's Military Establishment, Non-German Ethnic Minority and Foreign Volunteers, Conscripts, Laborers, and POWs, 1940 to 1945. I have since expanded that because as I did that research, I saw that it wasn't just the military realm, but it was also the civil realm, and that this, in fact, preceded the war in many instances. For example, Ukrainians and Germans had started collaborating through military intelligence in 1938. This later became the Nachtigall Battalion. So these things did, in fact, precede the war, these inter-ethnic alliances, if you will. So he just puts black Nazis. And then the first thing he says is, the description suggests that it is an apologist work, but I would like to hear your thoughts on the books. So he doesn't try to ask me, and my email address is right in the book, and you can just do the look inside feature on Amazon. One doesn't even have to buy my book. And the email address is right there. He's asking everybody on this forum, hey, tell me if this is an apologist work. And then everybody starts weighing in from there.
Oh, wow.
And what I found really odd is that they will not accept the Black Nazis title. And this is something that it's recently come to light on another blog. And I don't know why people are so hung up on the Black Nazis thing, but let me just explain the origin of that. I had come across an article in Ken Magazine. In the magazine, which was a temporary wartime publication in America, it says Black Nazis, literally. And the Allies are clearly denouncing these blacks for being dupes of the Nazis, if you will. Okay, so in order to accept this racist article itself, one has to think that the blacks were simply used. And we've gone over this before in a previous radio show of yours, where we said you either have to go with, yeah, the whites were so supreme that they were able to use all these other quote-unquote stupid backward people, or you can see it from the perspective of these blacks saw in working with the Nazis, collaborating with the Nazis, a way to raise themselves up, that they were equally using the Nazis, that it was a true collaboration and alliance. And of course, the Germans were counting the mixed race blacks, what they're described as quadroons and octoroons in this article, in the count that was the basis of Berlin's claim that a third of the white population in Germany, East Africa was German. So they were claiming these
Veronica,
people.
I'm sorry, we do have a break, a 3-minute break. We will be right back with our guest, Veronica Clark.
My neighbor, Welcome again to this neighborhood. I'd like to show you something. You know what this is? Well, maybe if I press this button.
Welcome back. This is Diana. And I am subbing for Clint tonight. His website is realityblogger.wordpress.com. And his chat room, if you'd like to visit the chat room during the program, is corporationnation.com. Chatango.com. There are people also in my chat room, which is spingola.chatango.com. Visit in either place and ask questions. You can ask questions during the program by emailing comment@spingola.com. Alrighty, our guest is Veronica Clark. She is the author of a lot of books. And it's kind of interesting, as we were talking before, I was going over the list of your books. It's not like you haven't written a lot or translated a lot of other books about various topics related to the Third Reich, that they would just kind of pick on this one and criticize you for the title.
Mm-hmm. And this one was actually my original book. I was never intending to publish or write like I have, but everything is... since then has been a spinoff from that original book. Now, just a little bit more on this forum. So the Black Nazis title comes from that Ken magazine article. I was able to actually get the Ken magazine from eBay. So I have it. And it's interesting because it's right underneath an article about a pamphlet called Roosevelt is a Jew in the magazine. And that was put out by the Nazis as well. So just really interesting. But it was Friedrich Berg who had originally proposed, why don't you just call it Black Nazis? He didn't like the original title. He's like, my goodness, that sounds like some ridiculous academic thing, the original title. He's like, you got to have something other than that. Mm-hmm. So we both kind of pondered around, and that magazine came up, and that's how it came to be. So it's not even my title. I must give credit to Fritz Berg for recommending it.
Okay. And as I mentioned, you do have a lot of other books, and you have you do all of your own typesetting and everything, which is amazing. There are a lot of people out there who say, well, how could I write a book? How could I get it printed? How could I get it published? And you have the software and everything, so you're doing all of your own work, all of your own publishing. Isn't that correct?
Correct. I stopped using the other guy I had. I didn't really like the way he'd make the text go into the very corner of the book, etc. There were just issues. And he left large gaps of space in my book. So you'll be reading and there's a big space gap. That's unfortunately, there's nothing I can do now because I do not have those original files. So in the possession of those PDFs. And I'm not going to get those back. But right. I wanted a more professional presentation, so I started doing my own. And then I also do my covers. So the Albion and Zion United cover is mine. The Black Wolf White Reich cover artwork is mine. And then the four Power Wolf books are mine.
Great. Great. Well, I like the format that you use here, as opposed to the one that I can tell what you're talking about. And actually, I hadn't noticed that before, but... boy, there's no margins, and it just...
Right. He crams a lot of text on there.
Right.
So, not the worst thing ever, but it's just, it makes it easier to read when the text block is smaller on the page. So that's really all I have to say on that.
Sure.
What else would you like to...
Well, so that was you were banned from the site.
Correct. I can't log in. It doesn't actually say that I'm banned because I'm German researcher on there, and it still says member, but I can't log in. It says I don't have that permission anymore. So they have they've effectively locked me out of logging back into Access History Forum, but for members that were banned, it actually says banned. So I don't know what they're doing.
Wow. Well, that's very interesting.
But they locked the thread. They said that an uncivil post took place, an uncivil interaction. They deleted an entire page and a half of posts that were mainly mine. And then he put an uncivil exchange was removed and the thread is locked on December 12th, 2013. so one cannot even post to that thread anymore. It's completely locked out.
Well, that's amazing.
He removed the, I did submit the Ken magazine article, Black Nazis, and put quite a bit more information, including a quote from Hans Massaqua's memoirs, Destined to Witness, where the SS man interviewing him is impressed with the axe he made. And he just tells him, look, we're going to need people like you. You are going to be the future mediator, go-between, between us and Africa when we get that colony back. So there's no suggestion of you're not part of our folk and, you know, you N-I-G-G-E-R kind of a thing. There is no hate or hostility. It's simply that Germany was going to try to find a place for these racial others. And that's really all it was. I did find an interesting book in French, and I sent you the, I believe I sent you the link to this.
Yes, you did.
It's by Sergei Villet, and it's, I can't pronounce French, Sombre or Sombres Bourreaux, and it's basically about the blacks that collaborated with the Nazis. He has a swastika on the front and then all these Africans around it. And in this book, he has an Afro-German mixed-race officer pictured in 1940 on page 130, and his name was Mandenga Ngango. I had only mentioned his name in my book, but this takes it even a step further because this man has the actual primary documents in France and whatnot on these men's lives. So it's just another book that goes right along with mine. A little more, very anti-Nazi, though, for the most part.
Okay. I do have a couple of email questions. People can ask questions during the program by just emailing comment@spingola.com. And a question, have you disavowed the research about Adolf Hitler and the NSDAP that you professed in your books and radio interviews?
I have to a degree, yes, because it's being misused, and it's also being abused. The misusage is that white nationalists are using it for their advantage, because what they're trying to do is they're trying to say, hey, guys, the Nazis weren't so racist. You're okay with white nationalism if we ever get into power. I don't like my work being used for a political agenda like that, especially when it's trying to lull non-whites into accepting white nationalism and that white nationalism means them no harm. And that's exactly how it's being used and politicized. The second thing is the abuse. Basically just trying to portray me as undermining and painting him as a rosy multiculturalist and all these things, which I have never done. I did come across one review of one of my books, and it's the only one that has ever understood what I'm about. And let me just read it. It's by a guy who goes by F. Dabney on Amazon. He says, I don't know anything about the author, but I kind of assumed that the title of her book was meant to poke fun at the diversity commissars. This is in reference to Triumph of Diversity, A New Look at Hitler's Armed Forces, which is out of print. He says, other than that, it's well known that a lot of non-Germans and quite a few non-Europeans served in the German armed forces in World War II. Also well known that Jesse Owens was more celebrated in 36 Germany than in the U.S. and that it was a myth that he was snubbed by Hitler. The author is most likely an eccentric iconoclast who enjoys thumbing her nose at the conventional. The last major Western taboos revolve around the whole Hitler question. I cannot possibly put it better than that. The Triumph of Diversity title was, in a sense, sarcastic. But, in a sense, it was also honest, because true diversity is not this kind of communistic or liberal democratic melding of everybody into one PC universalist personhood. It's about keeping the constellation intact, that we are all different. And Hitler respected that, as did National Socialism. So
okay. All righty. So you haven't really changed your views on National Socialism or on Hitler?
I have changed some of my views, yes. I believe that Alfred Rosenberg, was more intuitive and should have been given more power by Hitler. He was a more intuitive person. He understood the necessity of somehow including Slavicdom or Slavdom in this new order for Europe. And Hitler was too adamant against that. It was his downfall.
Okay, we do have to go to a 3-minute break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Your life through ideological hegemony. But if you think you need guns to stop tyranny, then what you waiting for? We've already stripped you of your liberty, privacy, civil rights, and dignity.
It is like a finger pointing away to the moon. Concentrate on the finger, or you will miss all that heavenly glory.
All righty, welcome back. I think I've got this music thing down. I get so involved in what the music is saying that I just let it, go on and on. But anyway, welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest tonight is Veronica Clark. Now, you do not have a website any longer. It used to be VeraIconaPublishers.org. But you don't have the website anymore?
No, I have a personal blog, but it's completely unrelated to anything we're discussing. It's just basically news articles.
Okay. All righty. Great. You are the author of War Wolves of the Iron Cross, A New Look at Hitler's Armed Forces, and Black Nazis, A Study of Racial Ambivalence in Nazi Germany's Military Establishment, and Black Nazis, Two, Ethnic Minorities and Foreigners in Hitler's Armed Forces, The Unbiased History. You are the translator and editor of War Wolves of the Iron Cross, The Hyenas of High Finance, which I must say is my favorite, and Hitler and Himmler Uncensored. And your most current book is Black Wolf, White Reich. And that's it, right?
There were other, there's a few others, but the people that have translated in the past no longer want affiliation with me for reasons of their own. Some of it's fear-based because they don't want to be extradited, or there's laws against Holocaust denial, et cetera, in the countries where they're at, and I respect that, but I don't want to claim sole credit on the translations that I did not do, because that has also been leveled against me.
Really?
So, yeah, it has.
Oh, my. Okay.
Yeah, but now, on some blogs. I'm not going to name names because that's...
Okay, no, I'm not asking.
Yeah. It gets rather scary when we start doing that.
Sure. Now, did you post on a forum, did you say, I, V.K. Clark, do hereby declare in this public forum...
Yes, I did. That is mine.
Okay.
And part of that was... I'd say 99.9% of that was because of white nationalism and white nationalists somehow trying to either involve me or draw me into their fights or their agenda or what have you. These people will not let me be. I don't know why. They either see me as useful in trying to legitimize white nationalism, or they see me as somehow trying to subvert them through my work, which I could care less about them. I don't care about them at all. I'm not trying to subvert anything. But these people tend to be extremely paranoid. And so they see anybody who is even somewhat liberal-minded as a subverter or some kind of agent. And I had mentioned in one of your previous programs that I was a paid supporter of the SPLC since 2009. I gave the specific reason why that was in your radio interview, but none of them cared to listen to that, I guess. So now they suspect me as being a mole. And that's fine. But the truth is, one can simply donate as little as $10 in a year, and they'll send you a membership card. So it doesn't mean that you're involved.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, that's like me getting a list from the CFR of all of their end of the year booklet. They do an end of the year booklet, and I really like getting that booklet, and so I asked for it, and they sent it to me. That doesn't mean that I belong to the CFR.
Correct, and I do like reading what the SPLC has to say, because it tells us their agenda.
Exactly, and I like to look at what they are doing so that I can be aware. It's like the attorney who prepares the other side's case just so he can anticipate what the other side would do or present. I mean, that is just being alert, and you always have to look at both sides.
Right, and I don't 100% oppose what they do. I do support their stance on protecting immigrant rights, etc., since we do have those people over here, and corporate power is so immense here. And those people don't have another advocacy like the SPLC that has that much money and power behind it. So supporting some frivolous little something rather over here is not going to get their rights asserted like the SPLC would. So that would be the other reason. And that's really it.
Right. Regarding white nationalism, I don't pay much attention to it. I have had some white nationalists on my program. I was kind of shocked because I have a lot of friends, a lot of people on my program who are certainly not white. I have respect for a lot of people, not because of their ethnic background, but because of who they are. So I don't get caught up in movements like the white nationalist or the CI movement, which I think is also, I mean, it has its good points, and I'm sure it has some wonderful people that work within it. But I think if we start embracing one kind of ideology at the exclusion of other people, I think that we leave out a lot of opportunities to teach or to share things with them.
I would agree. And just concerning Tila Tequila's interest in Adolf Hitler and related subject matter, it's always encouraging to see people other than Europeans and white Americans interested in World War II revisionism and unorthodoxy. So, I mean, that's important. It's important that non-whites see that they weren't simply used by the Nazis and Hitler. Now, if one wants to contend that they were simply used, then that's an opposing thesis to mine. But I do not agree with that thesis. I think that is a flawed thesis, and there's plenty of evidence that contradicts that thesis. And let me just read this one thing. Now, I had come across this book after I published the Platterhoff speech, and we can get to that later. Okay. But this book, I cannot recommend this enough. Every single person must read Christopher Hutton's Race and the Third Reich. In this book, Gunther, and this Hans K. Gunther is really the father of Nordicism. He is the reason why Nordic supremacy and the whole blonde-haired, blue-eyed Superman idea was introduced into NS rhetoric in the first place. Let me just say what he said about the German people. According to Gunther, six basic races made up the German folk: the Nordic, the Mediterranean, the Dinaric, the Alpine, the East Baltic, and the Falian or Falian. The Alpine is what Hitler was, as according to, it's that one thing on the history of the white race online. They have Hitler as an Alpine. Alpine is an interesting mix, and I will get to that here straight from Gunther. So there was also the proposition of a unique Sudeten race, but Gunther didn't give many details on that, and it was really just kind of dropped. So we are talking about six root races of Germanism or Germandom. Okay, and in addition, the German-speaking population had undergone influence from non-European races. This is coming straight from Gunther now, such as the Negro Negerish race, in particular via Southern Europe, the Mongolian race, the Near Eastern race, which would be Middle Eastern, which is related to the Dinaric race and the Oriental race. So he does not give us specifics on, okay, well, what was the Dinaric, the Oriental, etc. That is up to geneticists today to determine. But I have a feeling, given the E1B1B presence in the German people today and in Hitler's own family, that that was partly Somali. And this cannot be denied by anybody, that these, that Germans are part Negroid and Mongolian and this Near Eastern or Oriental. So, wow. I just thought that was really interesting coming from the Nordicist Günther. Now, he advocated that in spite of the fact that the German folk are literally a bastardized mixed-race people, and this is coming straight from these theorists, they are already miscegenated bastards who have been degraded. Wow. We can still save the Nordic element if we breed selectively.
Sure. All righty, we are going to our top of the hour break. We will be back at 6 minutes after the hour, so stay tuned.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
The brutes, men who despise you, enslave you, tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel. Who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural
men. I am subbing for Clint Richardson tonight, and I'm very happy to do that. His website is realityblogger.wordpress.com. Be sure to watch his great new video. It's called Common Core, Agenda 21, and Global Governance. It is a fabulous, fabulous movie. He's got a lot of links that corroborate the things that he's talking about in the movie, so do be sure and watch that. If you have a question or comment, just email that to comment at spingola.com. I also ask you to visit the chat room, and that is corporationnation.chatango.com. Or you could also go to my chat room, which is spingola.chatango.com, and ask your questions there. Now, earlier you mentioned Veronica, and our guest is Veronica Clark. You mentioned the Southern Poverty Law Center, and it kind of made me think about the NAACP and the fact that it was founded by Jewish people early, and that it did not have a black leader until quite late, probably 1979 or something like that. And it was founded about 1910 by Jews, and they pretty much controlled everything up to the point that it was turned over to a black leader. And it is my feeling that although things seem to be humanitarian minded, that they want to help the minority, that they want to be very helpful, it seems to me that they really want to control them.
What are your thoughts? I would definitely say there's an element of that, sure, but Jews always do what is in their best interest as Jews. And if they befriend these minorities and immigrants, then that is good for Jewish interests, because then they look like the hero. Now, but when somebody attacks these people, as the opposition to the SPLC does, that is not a smart tack. They should take it a different approach, in my opinion. Perhaps create a rival to the SPLC with a different motive. And right. That would be directed towards like your white nationalist types. If they want to resolve the immigration problem, then they have to come up with a solution that can go head to head with something like the SPLC. And they have not done that.
Right. Well, if you really look at the list of Jewish organizations in this country and elsewhere, it is absolutely astounding how unified they are, how unified they have always been, and how they do work together, which is one of the benefits, that they have, that the so-called truth movement or revisionist movement does not have. There seems to be so much infighting within the so-called truth movement that we simply don't have this kind of unification that they have. And until we stop fighting and decide that we are all in the same boat, we're going to fail.
Mm-hmm. I would disagree that there's no infighting within the Jewish community. I think there is quite a bit, but they are much more intelligent in their approach. They hide that. They do not publicly vent and attack one another unless it is in a very professional discourse. And that is the advantage they have always had. Interestingly enough, the Nazis ran up against that same thing, and they said almost verbatim what you said there. How do we go about challenging these people that are our superiors? Okay, the NSDAP conceded that Jews were superior because they had this purity core, a pure core, but they also were able to flourish as a commixture, as a Mischling mixed race people. And they were able to hollow out other peoples from within. They could do an inner colonizing of other peoples. Whereas the Nordic element, which was the antithesis to the Jewish element, its twin, if you will, the good twin versus the evil twin, that element was extremely fragile and had to be coddled and encouraged to come back out in the German people. And this is just, it's very interesting. And Hutton really gets into an intensive, detailed description and analysis of this war that was being waged between the Nordic element within the German people and the Jewish element within the German people, and that this Nordic element was also present in other peoples. And how does one go about getting that Nordic element to come back to the forefront without sounding like they're a Nordicist? That this is the most important element in the German people, that all other Germans are just miscegenated, denigrated, whatever's, mongoloids, negroids, dinaric, whatever, that this Nordic is really what we want. That is what Hitler was trying to very carefully do without disavowing what the National Socialists had said before in that Platterhoff speech. And here's a quote that was put forth by Dr. A.J. Greger in his small pamphlet, National Socialism and Race. That was, in fact, an essay that was submitted to, I believe it was called The European, and that was published by Diana Mosley. Hitler said, "The decisive problem which alone remained was thus. What was the method by which one was to find these men who, as successors of the former creators of the body of our people," he's talking about the Nordics, "and therefore, as their heirs, could today maintain their work?" So he's saying, who among us can be identified, and how so, to be Nordic? And he says, here there was but one possibility. One could not infer from the race, one could not from the race infer the capacity, but one had to infer from the capacity the racial fitness for the task. So what he's saying is, you can't look at a blonde-haired, blue-eyed, gorgeous man or woman and say, that right there, that is Nordic, we got to get that person to have kids. What if they're a criminal? What if they are a sociopath or a psychopath or completely uninterested in being a leader? He says, no. We have to find the talent and then assume that that person is Nordic from there. That is a complete change from Mein Kampf. And, of course, the people on the Axis History Forum screamed and wailed against that and said, I don't see any difference. I see a
big difference.
Big difference. And Aryan was completely dropped. This Padover, historian Saul K. Padover, now, he was an anti-Nazi historian. He said that the use of the term Aryan was fundamental to Nazi ideology. Hutton shows you how he was wrong What ended up happening is Aryan was too vague. It was really a linguistic term. And they couldn't determine a homeland or any of these things for these elusive Aryans. And so what instead happened is they adopted this Nordic or Nordicist principle. That became the unifying factor for all Germandom because Germans were so mixed race. They wouldn't be unified if Hitler could not point to one thing. Look here. You all bear Nordic blood. There is no reason to be disunited.
Okay, thank you.
And he himself did not look Nordic at all. He was, in fact, Alpine.
Well, I look pretty Nordic, actually.
You do. I've seen your pictures. Far more Nordic than I look.
Indeed. Let's getting back to the NAACP and the fact that during the time that the Jews were talking about, oh, the terrible, terrible things that were happening in Germany in 1933 when they declared war, economic warfare against Germany, and they were talking about the terrible persecution when there wasn't any persecution, but right here in this country, they were still hanging blacks in the South, and the Jews were in control of the NAACP, and we didn't hear a word about it. Well, from what I read, I wasn't around, but we're going to a quick break. We'll be right back in 3 minutes.
Must be the ones who start to mold a new reality closer to the heart, closer to the heart. Blacksmith and the artist.
All righty, we are back. We are back. I'm sorry we didn't get back sooner. This is Deanna, our guest tonight is Veronica Clark, and I'm subbing for Clint Richardson. I pull some books, all of your books off the shelf. And honestly, it's quite a tall pile here. Getting back to the question or the comment that I made before we went to the break about the NAACP and the fact that blacks were still being very persecuted here during the 30s, and yet they didn't seem to take note of that. Was it because they were so busy making claims against the Germans, or what do you think?
You mean the Jews weren't noticing that?
Yes.
Oh, I think they deliberately turned a blind eye. Their number one concern was the man over in Europe.
Sure.
they could afford to not point out crimes going on at home and kind of push that under the rug. And what's kind of disappointing is that the NSDAP did not do a better job targeting the black audience and population in America with good propaganda. They failed there. They did have propaganda, and it started taking off towards the end of the war, but it wasn't, and they were not on top of that.
Sure. I don't think they were as good at it as the Brits and the Americans.
I would say the British are number one in propaganda, and even the Germans struggled and admitted to struggling against their incredible propaganda, namely after World War One.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now you mentioned Rosenberg earlier, mm-hmm. and of course we know that back in June that the Holocaust Museum, the so-called United States Holocaust Memorial Museum, working with Homeland Security investigators, acquired the Rosenberg Diary. And they were making all these claims about how Rosenberg had mentioned the Holocaust and that kind of a thing. And actually, this book, this diary, was acquired during or right before the Nuremberg trials by one of the prosecutors, a Robert Kempner, who left Germany in 1933. He was a lawyer. He went back as a prosecutor and a researcher during the IMT. And he took a lot of the papers, a lot of Rosenberg's papers, and including this diary. And if this diary actually had some of the things that the Holocaust Museum is claiming that it has, they would have used it during the trial, and yet they did not do that. In fact, Kempner is the one that created some of the documentation. When they couldn't find documentation, then he simply had it created. So,
absolutely. I would go out on a limb on that as far as Rosenberg and exonerating him. Absolutely not. He was a wonderful person, and he did everything in his personal power. Pity he was an intellectual and not a man like Erich Koch, but he did everything to promote an interracial alliance, international alliance, including Slavs and even Russians if necessary, to get that war won. And his number one opponents were Hitler and Himmler. And even Himmler in the very end had to concede that Rosenberg had been right all along. Maybe it won't win the war, but by God, we should have tried it. It was a mistake. Goebbels was also hitting himself on the head over that. And that's in his diaries. And Himmler made a point of going to Hitler for Vlasov and selling Vlasov to Hitler and the Russian Liberation Army. That was Heinrich Himmler. He had finally conceded to Vlasov. And he told him, I apologize for putting out the Untermensch pamphlet. It was a mistake.
Okay.
So, I mean, this is very important that people hear this. It did happen too late, but it still happened. And it was a fundamental backpedaling on the part of certainly Himmler. And, of course, Hitler said, all right, do what you've got to do. Now, Hitler was more a practicality guy. He still had this idea that he was going to somehow colonize Slavdom and harness those people as the laborers of the Reich. Hitler was an imperialist and colonialist. I will concede on that point. He was.
Where do you find evidence of that?
Look at Jürgen Torvald's book, The Illusion. And there's another good one. I believe it's Fischer in its Soviet opposition to Stalin. And Fischer does an outstanding job breaking down the utilitarians versus the more liberal, interracially accepting, more tolerant people. Rosenberg was kind of in between, but he was much more, in my view, after reading the two books together, a genuine person for these other peoples, especially the Turks. And we're seeing this now, the big party. They're reaching out to Turkey, not Europeans, but Turks. I thought that was interesting because Yalbik is often called a neo-Nazi party.
Right.
That would be equivalent to exactly what Rosenberg was trying to do.
Okay. Well, there was also a lot of military leaders who Hitler wished that he had taken out of their position. Because they just viewed him as the corporal and did not and were really against him, and I blame them for the loss of the war rather than Hitler or the Nazi leadership, because they did not send supplies to the east when they should have. They countermanded some of Hitler's orders, some of the military leaders that favored Hitler. And so some of the worst traitors were the Germans themselves, who were going against their country.
I absolutely agree with that. I think if things had not happened that way, as far as the traitorship, and Mussolini's delaying what happened on the Eastern Front, and also the Japanese to an extent telling Stalin, you don't have to worry about an invasion from us, so that he could take those reserves and put them on the Russo-German front. Those are all factors. Those certainly contributed, and I think Hitler could have won it militarily. The problem is the Nazis lost politically, and eventually they would have had serious problems with their empire. There is no way the Ukrainians, Croats, Serbs, Estonians, Lithuanians, Latvians would have accepted German domination to the extent that he wanted to assert. There would have been uprisings. Basically, you would have seen the breakdown of NS imperialism and colonialism like we witnessed the end of British colonialism and American colonialism.
Their colonialism was a little bit different. It was more a symbiotic relationship. They did not go in and just seize a bunch of resources like the Brits did and use people in the colonies for cheap labor. It was something that benefited both the people that they wanted. Well, for instance, the Baghdad to Berlin Railway. Mm-hmm. They wanted to do something very good that would benefit both Iraq and Germany. We do have to go to a quick break. We will be back in 3 minutes.
Did you see the frightened ones? Did you hear the falling bombs?
And I am subbing for Clint Richardson tonight, a very good friend. His website is realityblogger.wordpress.com. And our guest is Veronica Clark. And she is the author and the editor and the publisher, the translator of many fine books. And one of the ones that I'm looking at right now is entitled World Freemasonry Unveiled. Now you have, and this is a Power Wolf publication. How is that different from a Vera Icona publication?
Power Wolf are just smaller. It's just a DBA doing business as. Just a different company I have registered.
Okay.
Can I correct one thing about the E1B1B? Just clarify?
Please.
Okay, my friend sent me this. The E1B1B isn't really Somali per se. It's a paternal marker that predated the Somalis and every other ethnic group around. It just so happens that the Somalis test the highest for that paternal marker. Of course, it's Y, not X. So paternal. And it doesn't mean that the original E1B1B man was Somali, but as a racial group, they have the highest level, so they are seen as the epicenter. They test 80%, whereas Germans, Austrians, and Italians test around 10%. But the point is, those peoples all share the same Y DNA at some point because they all carry that gene marker, E1B1B. So this is just more evidence that there was mixing that goes further back and that Europeans most certainly have some degree of black and Mongol blood. And of course, Gunther himself said that. It comes straight from the most prominent Nordicist of the NS era. So I just want to make sure nobody's saying that I'm trying to claim that Germans are Somali or something like that. Let's not reduce it to a silly accusation.
Sure. Sure. All righty. If you have questions or comments, please send an email to comment@spingola.com. And I do have an email. Have you ever done radio under another name, used another name on a radio program?
Yes, I have, because at the time I was still in school. And if a professor or advisor, etc., came across that, I would have been booted from the program.
What name did you use?
I used the name Emma Goldman, which Hans Krampe thought was very clever, seeing as how she was a communist.
Right.
And we did that intentionally. He liked it. And I used Emma Peters as well.
Okay.
And it has to be done. And I'm also employed. I work full-time, so.
Sure. Sure. And you did have some problem with your professor.
Yes.
Because when you did start talking about the things that you talk about, it added problems to your
life.
Yes,
it did. I can never go back to my thesis advisor, and I can never ask for another letter of recommendation from Norwich University ever again.
Right. And that is similar to the people who live in other countries who get, well, they go to jail or they get in all kinds of trouble.
They suffer much more.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. But you have... You've had your own bit of suffering as a result of your research efforts.
Mine mainly comes from the white nationalist community.
Okay.
Paradoxically.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. This little book with a lot of stuff in it, World Freemasonry Unveiled. How does Freemasonry play into the situation in the world?
Well, Freemasonry was basically infiltrated by Jewry, and at its foundation is the Kabbalah and Jewish mysticism. So they basically use that as another means of power behind the scenes. And Masonry was extremely powerful amongst the Anglo-Saxon race in particular. So that was basically a gateway into the Anglo-Saxon elite for the Jews. And Masons have always been opposed to Germanness and even Italian aspirations.
Okay. You have pictures in most of your books, and they're not just they're pictures that really are there for a definite purpose, not just to fill up the pages. Definitely. And we've talked about Freemasonry on other programs. And Freemasonry requires loyalty above loyalty to the nation. In other words, if you are a Freemason, then you have more loyalty to Freemasons, even in an enemy country that you happen to be at war with, than you do to your own country.
Correct. Unless you control Freemasonry, then you can be loyal to both, and you can harness Freemasonry to your own nationalist agenda, which I suspect the Jewish Zionists have done.
Sure. All right. Okay, let's see if we have any more questions. Nope.
Okay. In the meantime, I can just point out that Eugen Fischer, who was the man who was really behind the push to sterilize the mulatto children from the World War I occupation of the Rhineland, he gave a lecture in Berlin on February 1st, 1933, entitled Race Crossing and Intellectual Performance. And in this talk, which got him into a lot of trouble with the NS authorities and his fellow Nordicist race anthropologists, he praised race mixing and defended it. And he pointed out that there were gifted Mischlinge such as Pushkin and Booker T. Washington, which was interesting because Hitler also praised Booker T. Washington in particular. That man must have been especially impressive to the National Socialists.
He was. His middle name was Taliaferro.
Ah.
And the Taliaferro family was very prominent in Virginia. And some of my ancestors were Taliaferros, and it was not my direct ancestors, but mm-hmm. another Taliaferro family owned, I hate to say that, owned his mother. I hate to even suggest that people should own each other.
Right, but it's in the past. That was the order.
Exactly,
of the
exactly.
Very interesting. Another interesting fact I came across is that in 1942, there was this massive collection of papers sponsored by the SS. And in this conglomeration of researchers, one of them was a Soviet geneticist. So a Soviet geneticist was involved in an SS race research project. It was mainly specifically on genetic inheritance. But very interesting. In 1942, and then I guess the other thing would be that Walter Gross, as the head of the racial policy office, it was specifically race policy office in Berlin, he had to quell the discussions of race before the public. He said, listen, you guys have got to stop disseminating this. Stop publicizing it to the extent you are. This must be very carefully handled and controlled, because what was happening is people were starting to look at Hitler and the racial elite, and they were, or the German elite, and they were going, oh, what's up with this Goering here? He's obese. What's up with this Hitler here? He looks like a mongoloid, alpine, you know, et cetera, et cetera. He doesn't look like no Nordic to me. Look at Goebbels. He has a club foot. Shouldn't he be not having children? Shouldn't he be sterilized? So it was getting public backlash in that respect, but it was also causing Germans to look at each other and go, well, you're a dark-haired degenerate. I'm a beautiful blonde, so you're not as good as me. This is literally what it was reducing the German people to, was enemies of their own selves. And so it had to be very carefully controlled. And that was what Walter Gross's job was. And he goes, look, we are a racial mix, but there can be no talk of supremacy of any one of these racial components or nuclei. That's got to stop. And unfortunately, because the Germans at that time were so anti-Soviet, they completely rejected the Soviet thesis of racial plasticity, the idea of racial mixing as being beneficial. In the case of Eugen Fischer, there was also Saller, and there was one other one, I believe his name was Mecklenburg. These people all saw some merit to that discussion, and some of them were imprisoned by the NS authorities for so stating, because they were seen as proponents of communism.
Fine. All righty, we do have to take a 3-minute break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Thank you for allowing me back into your homes. If this is your first time with us, let me extend a personal invitation.
Let's build a happy little clown.
All righty, we are back. That's very interesting. I was going to listen to it and see what he was going to say. And then I realized, no, that sounded like a commercial. I know. Well, you sent a link during the commercial of the geneticatlas.com/world_y-dna.htm. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at it now. It looks very interesting. I've never seen this before. And,
It really causes a lot of problems for modern day, quote unquote, racial anthropology and the study of race and what it really means. Because even the National Socialists severely struggled with this issue. And it was actually Merkenschlager, that was the other racial theorist who was marginalized by the NSDAP for kind of promoting a multiracial German approach. But basically, Saller and Merkenschlager argued that the creators of modern Europe were, in fact, bastards. I hate to use that term, but that's the term they used back then. And, in fact, it was this mongrel mixture, or Bastardgemenge, which was the stage on the way to a new, higher German race. And that Germany's future strength was one in which all racial currents had a great role to play. That would be those from the north, the south, the east, and the west. The idea that the folk and Rasse should be fused, that they should not be differentiated any longer, that there could really be no more speaking of pure race. It just didn't exist, not in any people. And then he also, the one individual, I believe it was, was this Saller? No, this was Müller van den Broek's idea, that the Prussians were, in fact, a synthesis of Germanic and Slavic. So there we already have a case where one of the racial theorists was saying that some Germans were already Slavicized. So what is so fearful about the quote-unquote Asiatic hordes? And again, it really boils down to the anti-communist propaganda. That, you know, you're waging war against communism, you can't be saying really at the same time that we're going to mix with these people. So we don't really know what would have happened in the future if Germany had colonized the Slavic East. But what I do know is there were still some Germans who were very opposed to the whole idea of putting the Slavics on par with the Germans.
Right. And it's unfortunate. I mean, when you consider the makeup of Europe at that time, well, before World War One, people did not live as nation states. They were just, mm-hmm. there were just people here, a group of people here, another here, and they weren't really divided up according to racial or ethnic background.
Mm-hmm. Precisely. And so the nation state concept is really what introduced this whole idea of Völker, or, you know, the many different folks that coexist amongst each other.
Sure.
And the Nazis were grappling to define all these things and decide what it was that made Germans Germans and Britishers British. They were struggling because they realized genetically they were also mishmashed.
Sure. Okay, I have a question, an email question from Charles. What were the names of the two books that you mentioned showing Hitler was an imperialist? One was The Illusion, but who is the author? And what was the title of the other book, and who was its author?
I believe it's George Fisher. I don't have my books with me right now because I just moved, but George Fisher, Soviet Opposition to Stalin. It may be hard to come by, but try and get it. And the other one was Jürgen Thorwald, or Jürgen Thorwald, and that is The Illusion. And it was Soviet Soldiers in Hitler's Army, or in the Nazi Army, is the subtitle.
Okay.
There are others that are related, but I don't have my books with me right now. There was another one specifically about the German occupation of the East from 41 to 45. I had sent you that book link a long time ago, Deanna. I don't know if you remember that one.
Yes, it's downstairs. I don't have it upstairs.
Okay.
In my bookcase upstairs.
That one really details with strong evidence the racism that existed between Germanic and Slavic. And Erich Koch went so far as to call the Ukrainians the N-word.
Right. Well, there were a lot of Germans in Ukraine because the Russian czarist Catherine the Great invited people to come into that area of the Ukraine and develop the land. And so a lot of Germans who didn't have land, went there, and I'm talking the late, early 1800s, and they went there, they worked the land, developed it, made it fertile, and so a lot of the Ukrainians who died during 1932-33, during the winter, were actually Germans, or people mm-hmm. who had lived in Germany, the German Empire, before.
Mm-hmm. And those may have been the Ukrainians that were favored by the Germans. I'm not totally sure, but
sure.
I just know that their policies in Ukraine did a lot of damage. And Rosenberg was screaming against this all the time. He said, you cannot do what you're doing. Don't you understand? We are not doing well militarily. You can't afford to lose this politically. It is our last hope.
Sure.
And there were many Wehrmacht officers, generals, Zeitzler, Strickfeldt, that were heavily politicized, very involved politically, and did their darndest to get the NS leaders to turn their, you know, change their policy, change their minds on the whole political aspect of the war, and they just wouldn't do it until it was too late. So this is a significant factor in Germany's loss, and it really has to be acknowledged. At least I feel I must acknowledge this.
Well, some of the problem in the warfare was that the Soviets had a scorched earth policy, particularly in the Ukraine, where they just burned everything. And then when the Germans came in and occupied the area, they had to import food into the area to feed the people, the residents there, who Stalin just left to fend for themselves, to starve to death.
Mm-hmm. And that was always a huge problem.
Yes.
Feeding.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so it was up to the German occupiers to feed the local residents because of Stalin's policy. So, I mean, there were so many things, so many aspects of the war that you have to look at in order to figure out, okay, why didn't Germany win? Why did they lose? Why did they lose in one area? You know, and it was different in each area because of the weather. Mm-hmm. It was just a big mess. Well, warfare is a big mess. It's mass murder.
Agreed. It's very difficult to even fathom some of the logistical problems associated with feeding, clothing, etc. It was a huge problem, especially with the rail gauge differences.
Oh,
so
yes.
So all of that certainly must be factored in.
Sure.
But, I mean, just reducing it to the Nazis just bashed everyone over the head. They were ultra-racist. I mean, you got Ethan B. Katz saying they were the most, quote-unquote, lethally racist regime in history. That is reckless to say such things. And really, that's all I'm interested in counteracting. I've got this Garrett Phillips, who still contributes on my Amazon pages for my books, and he put, though the obviously ridiculous, cranky, and basically 19th century racial theories of Nazism also added the Tibetans, the Sioux, pure Roma, and Japanese to their honor roll. I mean, these people, the average person, still thinks that this Superman idea and the ultra-racism is there, and that they were bent on genociding everybody. There's even a Black Holocaust trajectory. And I'm really the only, I think I am the only historian that's challenged the Black Holocaust. Everyone else just completely ignores that thesis. Well,
sure.
Africans take it very seriously. And so in my view, it's important to show them how that thesis is also flawed.
Sure. One of the programs that we did, that we talked about, you talked about Operation Wetback, and we don't have time to go into it, but it's something that I purchased the book. It was quite expensive because it was out of print, and anyway, we're out of time. The time went by so quickly.
But it was a very good comparison between Jewish emigration.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Well, thank you so much, Veronica, for being on the program tonight.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye, listeners.